to drift until she came for him. Part 8. The Trojan Seahorse. Ebony half-moons that soar from pools where the half-light begins to set, when, on what far shore, dolphins, dolphins? Hamish McLaren. Chapter 76. Galactics. Bei Chuan cursed the parsimony of her superiors. If the Cynthian High Command had sent a mothership to observe the Battle of the Fanatics, she might have been able to approach the war zone in a flitter, a vessel too small to be detected. As it was, she had been compelled to use a starship large enough to travel through transfer points and hyperspace, too small to defend itself adequately, and too large to sneak past the combatants. She almost fired upon the tiny globe that nosed around the asteroid that sheltered her ship. Just in time, she recognized the little Wazoon-piloted probe. He pressed a stud to open a docking port, but the Wazoon hung back, sending a frantic series of tight laser pulses. "Your position discovered," it flashed. "Enemy missiles closing." Bei uttered her vilest damnations. Every time she almost got close enough to cast a message through the jamming to the Earthlings, she had to flee from some random paranoid tentacle of battle. "Come in quickly and dock." She tapped out a command to the Wazoon. Too many of the little loyal clients had died for her already.
"Negative. Flee, Bei. Wazoo 2 will distract."
Bei snarled at the disobedience. The three Wazoon, who remained on the shelf to her left, cringed and blinked their large eyes at her. The scout globe sped off into the night. Bei closed the port and fired up her engines. Carefully, she weaved her way through the lanes between chunks of primordial stone, away from the area of danger. Too late, she thought, as she glanced at the threat board. The missiles were closing too fast. A sudden glare from behind told of the fate of the little Wazoon. Bei's whiskered upper lip curled as she contemplated a suitable way to get even with the fanatics, if she ever got a chance. Then the missiles arrived, and she was suddenly too busy even for nasty, pleasant thoughts. She blasted two missiles to vapor with her particle gun. Two others fired back. Their beams were barely refracted by her shields. "Ah, Earthlings," she contemplated. "You'll not even know I was ever here. For all you know, you have been forsaken by all the universe. But don't let that stop you, Wolflings. Fight on. Snarl at your pursuers. And when all your weapons fail, bite them." Bei destroyed four more missiles before one managed to explode close by, sending her broken ship spinning, burning, into the dusty galactic dark. Chapter 77. Toshio. The night blew wet with scattered blustery sheets of rain. Glossy broadleaf plants waved uncertainly under contrary gusts from a wind that seemed unable to decide on the direction. The dripping foliage glistened when two of Kithrop's nearby tiny moons shone briefly through the clouds. At the far southern end of the island, a crude thatch covering allowed rain to seep through in slow trickles. It dripped onto the finely pitted hull of a small spaceship. The water formed small meniscus pools atop the gently curving metal surface, then ran off in little rivulets. The tappity-tap of the heavy raindrops hitting the thatch was joined by a steady patter as streams of runoff poured onto smashed mud and vegetation beneath the cylindrical flying machine.
The trickles sluiced over stubby stasis flanges and sent jagged trails over the forward viewports, dark and clear in the intermittent moonlight. Trails penetrated the narrow cracks around the aft airlock, using the straight channels to pour dribbling streams onto the muddy ground. There came a tiny mechanical hiss, barely louder than the rainfall. The cracks around the airlock widened almost imperceptibly. Neighboring streams merged to fill the new crevices. A pool began to form in a dirt basin below the hatch. The doorway cracked a little farther. More trickles merged to pour in, as if seeking to enter the ship. All at once a gurgling stream poured from the bottom of the crack. The flow became a gushing waterfall. Then, just as abruptly, the torrent subsided. The armored hatch slid open with a muted sigh. Rain sent a flurry of slanting droplets, pelting into the opening. A dark, helmeted figure stood in the threshold, ignoring the onslaught. It turned to look left and right, then stepped out and splashed in the puddle. The hatch shut again with a whine and a small click. The figure bent into the wind, searching in the darkness for a trail. Denny sat up suddenly at the sound of wet footsteps. With her hand at her breast, she whispered, "Tosho?" The tent's fly was pushed aside, and the flap zipped open. For a moment a dark shape loomed. Then a quiet voice whispered, "Yeah, it's me." Denny's rapid pulse subsided. "I was afraid it was somebody else." "Who'd you expect, Charlie Dart? Come out of his tent to ravish you, or better yet, one of the Kikwi?" He teased her gently, but could not hide the tension in his voice. He shrugged out of his dry suit and helmet, which he hung on a peg by the opening. In his underwear, Tosho crawled over to his own sleeping bag and slid in. "Where have you been?" "Nowhere. Go back to sleep, Denny." The rain pattered on the fly in an uneven tattoo. She remained sitting up, looking at him in the faint light from the opening. She could see little more than the whites of his eyes, staring straight up at nothing.
"Please, Tosh, tell me. When I woke up and you weren't in your sleeping bag..."
Her voice trailed off as he turned to look back at her. The difference that had grown in Tosho Iwishaka the last week or so was never more manifest than in his narrowed expression, than his slitted intensity in his eyes. She heard him sigh finally.
"All right, Denny. I was just over at the longboat. I snuck inside and had a look around."
Denny's pulse sped again. He started to speak, stopped, then finally said,
"Wasn't that dangerous? I mean, there's no telling how Takata Jim might react, especially if he really is a traitor."
Tosho shrugged.
"There was something I had to find out."
"But how could you get in and out without being caught?"
Tosho rolled over onto one elbow. She saw a brief flash of white as he smiled slightly.
"Our Mitty sometimes knows things even the engineering officers never find out, Denny. Especially when it comes to hiding places aboard ship. When off-duty time comes, there's always a pilot or a lieutenant around thinking up homework for idle hands and fins. Always just a little more astrogation or protocol to study, for instance. Naki and I used to grab sack time in the hold of the longboat. We learned how to open the locks without it flashing on the control room."
Denny shook her head.
"I'm glad you didn't tell me you were going after all. I would have died of worry."
Tosho frowned. Now Denny was beginning to sound like his mother again. She still wasn't happy about having to leave while he stayed behind. Tosho hoped she wouldn't take this opportunity to bring up the subject again. Denny lay down and faced him, using her arms as a pillow. She thought for a moment, then whispered,
"What did you find out?"
Tosho closed his eyes.
"You might as well know," he said. I want you to tell Jillian in case I can't get through to her in the morning. I found out what Takata Jim is doing with those bombs he took from Charlie.